Damascus, Syria, 1988. He was known to the CIA's clandestine service as the Chemist, and few at headquarters would ever know his real name. A professor and a gifted scientist, he had been perfectly positioned for spy work, with a job that entitled him to privileges not accorded to ordinary Syrians, including a broad latitude to travel and to meet with foreigners in the crowded souks and smoke-filled cafes of the old city. He drew little attention to himself as he moved about, a small, bespectacled man in his late 30s with gray-flecked hair and light skin, in a modest suit that might have belonged to a salesman or bureaucrat. Only when he spoke English was there a hint of something exotic, a distinct American accent. It was the only detectable residue from a youth spent partly in the United States, where he attended school, ate cheeseburgers, played sports, and even joined the Boy Scouts, all before returning to his homeland to become an expert in making chemicals designed to kill human beings. He was proud of his professional work, so proud, in fact, that analysts suspected at times that his spying was motivated less by patriotism or greed than by a compulsion to boast. His first attempt at establishing contact had occurred at a scientific conference in Europe, where he had asked a friend to pass along a note to an American at the U.S. Embassy. Many months passed before the CIA followed through, yet he seemed unsurprised when a stranger approached him after one of his evening lectures at Damascus University. "I've been expecting you," he told the visitor, a 20-something CIA case officer who would soon be entrusted with an extraordinary military secret. "Call me Iman." The Chemist seemed to take an instant liking to the American, and the two spent long hours in conversation as each quietly sized up the other. One day, the scientist invited the young officer to his home in downtown Damascus, a small apartment he shared with two different women he had wed legally under Syria's permissive polygamy laws. He seemed compelled to justify his living arrangements, as another man might explain an extravagant impulse purchase. His first wife was an excellent cook, he said. But he had decided to marry a second, considerably younger woman, his secretary, out of a purely carnal attraction. Who could have foreseen such turmoil? The two women squabbled constantly, except for the times when they united to direct their scorn at him. He had wanted a spicier love life and ended up with a case of perpetual heartburn. "I don't recommend it," the scientist counseled his guest. The two wives politely served coffee as Iman spoke of his high school and college years in the United States, and of the kindly American couple who took care of him when he arrived as a wide-eyed teenager with a suitcase and an academic scholarship. He showed off his stereo and musical collection, playing a few tracks of moody electronica from his favorite artist, French New Age composer Jean-Michel Jarre. And then, after the women left the room, the Syrian turned to the subject that he had waited anxiously to talk about. That evening, and over multiple visits in the weeks that followed, he told an incredible story as the case officer sat transfixed, the sludgy coffee turning cold in his cup. On a hill overlooking the capital stood a complex of heavily guarded laboratories where Syria's military establishment carried out experiments on new weapons. The foreign intelligence services were well familiar with the Scientific Studies and Research Center, commonly known as CERS, its French initials, as the place that supplied the engineering muscle behind Syria's modest line of missiles designed to deliver conventional warheads to Tel Aviv or Jerusalem. But hidden within CERS was a secret unit called Institute 3000, and Iman was one of its leaders and senior researchers. Its primary work was making a line of exceedingly lethal poisons to be placed inside those warheads. The scientists called their project Al-Shakush, or, in English, the Hammer. In part because of his own contributions, Institute 3000 had made remarkable strides, the chemist said. Syria's chemical weapons program had started simply with mustard gas, famously used in the trenches of Europe during the epic battles of World War I. But now it had moved to a far deadlier class of poisons called nerve agents, which Institute 3000 was beginning to produce in an underground factory just outside the capital. These were nightmare weapons, and the Syrians had created multiple variations so they could adjust to changing battlefield conditions. One of them, sarin, had been around for half a century and still was regarded as one of the deadliest substances ever made. Another one, called VX, was even deadlier than sarin and longer lasting. It left behind an invisible oily coating that could kill for days, since the slightest brush against bare skin is nearly always fatal.